now it has begun. Take me to the deep. Take me to the deep. Take me to the deep.
And I'm the Reverend. I'm here to say so long for now. How are you? Angela Davis, thank you for your teaching, bringing us together, concepts of peace and freedom and even beauty, joining with your uprising of racial justice and the representation for women. Beautiful Earth is that song that was created by most of the Stop Shopping Choir. Francisco Benitez, Savitri D, Eric Johnson on drums, Kai, Ariella, just a sunder. Shilpan Narayan, thank you for the storm. Savitri D, news from the natural world. Fans of Earth Riot Radio know about Savitri's reporting. Earth Riot Radio, that has the Earth Riot Radio inside the Earth Riot Radio. It's a section of a book that we published, that Apocalypse, the Earthers. Jason Candler, editor and saxophonist. Brendan Burke on drums. Well, now you can reach us if you want the record with all of our songs, eight of our songs that you hear on Earth Riot Radio a lot. RevBilly, RevBilly.com. Just ask for the record. We'll find out how to send it to you. And just communicate with us. Here we are at the holiday season. We're kind of, despite the fact we live in the middle of New York, we are community people. We'd like to be in direct contact with the radio station communities, with the people who download on computers. Please, please have a good, safe, wild weekend. Amen. Earth-a-lu-yah.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
This is Joseph Galvan. I'm your host for Art Focus. KBOO Community Radio is only possible with your support, so join the party and contribute at kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. That's kboo.fm/give, or you can just text KBOO to the number 44321. Thanks a lot.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Dave Hazlett. He's an owner member artist at Waterstone Gallery at 124 Northwest 9th, and he's here talking about 30 years Waterstone Gallery. It's an anniversary group show. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Dave.
Well, thank you, Joseph, for coming in and making the public aware of our show.
So Waterstone's been around 30 years, 6 years in this location next to the Fuller Coffee Shop in the Pearl. It's sort of a co-op, or it's artist-owned, but that just means everybody produces work and everybody pitches in on the business side and also sits in the gallery, and that's what you're doing here today on a Friday.
Yeah, the difference between a co-op gallery or a member-owned gallery as opposed to a singer-owner gallery is that all the artists have agreed to do their different jobs, you know, from marketing to bookkeeping to hanging the shows and making us look professional, and then all the dirty work that's behind the scenes, you know, painting and cleaning and just keeping everything going, paying the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this show, to celebrate 30 years, it has work by 15 artists. We probably can only talk about 7 or 8 in a short time we have. Let's talk about one when you walk in, a big loop of stone. And it's one of yours, right?
That's correct. What you're looking at here is a piece of serpentine. And I try to work as much Northwest stone as I can get my hands on. And I prefer the basalt, the granite, the olivine, and this just happens to be a very unique, special stone that came out of the Pilchuck River about 14 years ago. I got it about 2 years ago, yeah.
The piece is called Never, Always, and Forever, and it's a kind of a, you know, it's like a ribbon of stone. The interior is flat and carved and polished, and it looks like marble, black and sort of ghostly green. The outside is textured like rock, and it kind of looks like the REI climbing wall. It looks artificial, you know, it's so smooth. The colors are white and brown. This was a big rock, and you took it and drilled a massive hole in the middle.
Yeah, correct. This probably weighed about 400 pounds originally, so he had some help pulling it out of the river. It weighs 250 pounds as it is here in the gallery. The surface is just so unique in its veining and its green coloration, and it almost lends itself to the Japanese art form suseki, which are these miniature replications of something monumental in nature, and that's huge in Japan, where that's a very collected and sought after art form. Yeah, it kind of is in that vein that I kept the natural integrity of this material.
Was it just a rock in a river?
Yeah.
Why did the guy like pick it out?
Well, as you can see from the veins and the green, that's what he saw laying in the river, and he just said, I gotta have that, right?
When it was pulled out, it was covered in moss.
Yeah, it was almost a beer bottle brown with the river gunge on it and the iron buildup. And so what I've done to the surface is taken a diamond brush system that's a relatively recent invention in the stone world. I literally have an industrial diamond in the brush bristles, and it's like a giant toothbrush. And I can literally scour the surface of some stones. Not all stones react to it. But this one did, and as you can see, it's got a pretty interesting natural form to it.
Did you drill the middle out and throw it away?
Absolutely. I drilled it, but no, I made sculptures out of the interiors, and I've sold them all. And this was the remaining piece that I've just completed for this show.
Was the idea then to make this big piece, you know, make one big piece at the end?
Well, I tried to, if I can get pieces out of the center of some stones, and if the remaining is interesting enough, I will then follow through and make a piece out of that, yeah.
You have another piece just a few feet away against the wall. I mean, similar, it's a loop of stone, onyx, Arizona onyx on granite. It's so beautiful. It looks like wood, you know, it looks like a polished burl wood. It's brown, got this incredible grain that goes from brown and yellow through to gray. There's a big rough patch at the top. I'd say it's a kind of a heart shape, but the hole in the middle is more regular. It kind of looks like a cam, you know, on a car, sort of a circle with a bulge. So you've got this contrast in the extreme organic shape and then this hole that you've made. This is called 5 miles from infinity.
Right.
What does that mean?
What that means is when you think about the big picture, if this concept of this ever-expanding universe, could we ever really approach infinity? I don't think so. I think the closest you could ever get is 5 miles, whatever. I just think that concept of trying to think about something that we probably can't ever really conceptualize, but we can talk about it. So I thought in a tongue-in-cheek sort of a humorous way I would apply that title to this piece. So what you're looking at with this Arizona onyx is I'm trying to accomplish a sort of wind-blown, water-worn, things that you'll see down on the coast or up in the Cascade Mountains, all the trees and rocks that have been just brutally been punished by the weather. For all the layering and banding in this Arizona onyx, for every 12 inches, they estimate it takes 1 million years to form. So you're looking at a lot of time, which just fascinates me. I'm all about time and what's already taken place here on the planet.
There's a lot of sculpture in this show. There's a piece by Stephen Adams. It's similar, it's like a wheel. It's wooden, and then he's inserted this really thick green glass as sort of where the wheel, where the circle is broken, he's filled it in, but that glass also covers the front. It's basically two pieces making up a big circle. What is this type of glass?
I'm not exactly clear on what particular glass he's using, but he laminates all these pieces to get this absolutely luscious green color, and then combines it with, in this particular piece, a maple burl that he's carved and then laminated together. The combination of the wood and glass, some of his themes and metaphors are the glass is kind of representing water in some of his pieces. It almost is like it's a vessel, wood vessel containing water and the preciousness and the value of water.
The lamination is, you know, 15 sheets of glass about a centimeter thick.
Yeah.
But you can see the edge, the lines on the edge, but when you look through them, it's like real ice that's been made, you know, without bubbles in it. And then the light hits it and it sends sort of green arcs across the room. It's very much sculpture designed to make you appreciate nature, I think, because you're fascinating the natural state of the wood. Is there something about Waterstone, the type of work that it attracts?
Well, we want to think of ourselves as keeping the art bar raised pretty high and to maintain a real good standard of what we can present to the public and to our clients. We feed off each other and our multi-talented group, and it's a mutual appreciation of each other and each other's skill set. In this gallery. So I'd say that we all really have mastered our crafts and try to produce as much quality work as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm. So this is like master craft. This person knows glass, knows wood really well, but makes an abstract form, a sculpture, by using their craft. If you move down one, there is a beautiful painting by Angelita Sermon, and it's striking because you're looking into these very thin kind of wispy trees. There's almost a circle of light in the middle, and then a few more trees in the background, the faded gray, green and brown leaves. It's called Early Morning Fog. But
Angelita tends to work with close-up observations of tangled grasses, reflections from the water, branches and thickets. Typically scenes that we wouldn't normally look at. She finds this very intrinsic detail beauty in all that sort of chaotic undergrowth. And then the way she's presented it, I mean, it's almost like you're looking out a window. I really enjoy this piece. She's captured the fog that's here in the Northwest. I mean, that looking out through the thicket as your sight line is limited, you know.
This is nature art, but this is like side of the highway nature art. I can imagine you walk in a bit and there's like an old refrigerator in there or somebody's trash bags. This is like the sort of unpopular side of landscape. And tell us how it came about. What was her sort of moment?
Angelita had a kind of a traumatic experience many years ago and involving a horse that got away in an accident. And it intensified her focus to really look at the thickets and things that could get out onto the road. And then she's taken that and processed that into a lot of her paintings.
So, if you're driving along and you're terrified of a deer jumping out, you, whether you're a passenger or not, you're going to be like looking into this kind of brush, you call it. And so she's taken that focus and made paintings.
Yeah, and she just has taken this, you know, a whole other level of intensity. And then applying her painterly skills to bring it out in this beauty.
Sabrina Hawk is a PSU teacher. She has produced these collages. They're images of a woman in a headdress, and they're stuck on, they're cut out many times, painted red mainly, a bit of blue, and they're stuck on a blue paper background, sort of handmade paper. And then in the back, there are these handprints that are done in that henna kind of pattern, the sort of geometric. They're kind of stylized hands with the fingers together, and these are stamped in the background around the woman's multiple images of the woman's head. And there are four women heads lying sort of at an angle in the front row. What do you know about Sabrina?
Well, I know she's originally from Pakistan, and as you mentioned, she's an instructor at Portland State. And she, in her oil paintings and drawings, she tries to use the element symbols of fire and water as metaphors for ecological transformation and renewal. That's kind of her approach. And she also does installation art in galleries, and she's got some great videos online of some of her work. She worked with a local dance company, and she had her work on video, and then these ghosting dance figures kind of interacting with the dancers. It was really quite stunning.
She has another piece a few feet away. It's similar. It's a woman's figure in a sort of long black gown and veil, but she's printed out multiple times like radiant petals of a flower. It's yellow and black with a bit of orange, and it's all on a green paper background. Come together, marigold women.
I mean, it's very pleasing to the eye. It's circular in arrangement, and you know, Sabina's going to have to give you the some of this inside explanation of some of her metaphors here. Yeah.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Dave Hazlett. He's a stone sculptor and an owner member artist. He's talking about 30 years Waterstone Gallery, a show on now through January 29th. Talking of artists who also perform or connected to performers, Micah Castle has these three paintings. They're semi-abstract. I would say one looks like a form, adapt to environ. It could be a human head and shoulders. These are sort of, you know, look like early 20th century cubism, and they're acrylic and graphite and Conte. What else does Micah do?
Oh, Micah is a very accomplished musician as well as a graphic designer and a relatively new member, and we're really happy to have him in here. To me, these have a very Rauschenberg de Kooning sort of feel to them. They have that sort of 60s kind of color palette and shapes and forms. I'm really attracted to these. I just find them very pleasing, and the more I look at them, the more I find. On his musician side, he's a drummer and has toured with Curtis Elgato and plays with many and records with many mm-hmm. other.
So he's a session man.
As well as a live performer, yeah. And so very accomplished.
So he had a show here a few months ago. What happened?
Yeah, this summer. He had a beautiful show and it sold very well. He was very successful with that. For his art talk, he brought in his drum kit, then he brought in a Bill, the stand-up bass player, and then Noah, a trumpet player, and they played this, you know, improvised jazz. Micah had a big 6-foot square canvas set up, and he would pull off the drums, the bass and trumpet would keep playing, and he would smear and push and scribble on this canvas during it was sort of a improv happening. And then he'd sit back down and play for a few minutes, another 5 minutes, and do some more work. And they did this for an hour. And they'd stop and do some Q&A during that. But it was a very enjoyable experience. We had a packed house in the gallery. We had people standing out on the sidewalk. Yeah, it was a very nice experience between the music and the interaction and then this color palette, watching it be born. Yeah,
we had Susan Harrington on a show earlier this year. She does these floral paintings set in landscapes. So you kind of get a sense of the flower or the plant and then where it's from, sort of portraiture of flowers. I didn't know much about Waterstone's artists, but having walked around and seen an awful lot of sculpture here, one of the standout pieces is called Mask of Bequ, B-E-Q-Q-U, and it's by Michael DeForest, and he's taken, I think, colored paper in layers and then sort of papier-mâched it into this giant mask. So you have this white face with black holes for the eyes and a sort of a lattice work headdress part to it. It's kind of like a pineapple shape. Where the paper is feathered, you can see all the different colors of the layers of colored construction paper. But he also uses wood. So what kind of woodworker is Michael?
Well, Michael likes to explore the stories of the natural and mythical, the irreverent, the sacred, the pragmatic, the sublime. He tries to combine all this in his woodworking turning, and it's a very complex process where he will, say for instance, turn a bowl and then cut it apart like a puzzle piece and then sew it, literally sew it back mm-hmm. together. And you can see in this mask piece that he's sewn. He likes to introduce that that style into his work, where he's sewn all these lattice pieces back into each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lattice is very carefully sewn. There's one stitch per corner, sort of on the crossover bars. In the other piece you mentioned, it's a cat skull bowl. So it's a really big bowl, like a sort of 18 inch wide round bowl with this, it's white with milk paint. It's in strips like a spiral, and then each strip is sewn with these giant stitches, you know, like an inch long. Inside the bowl is a big yellow hand, palm up, and inside that is a little drawing of a cat skull, sort of white on yellow on white. And this is basswood with milk paint and nylon sinew.
Yeah, you can just the intensity level of how much work goes into this piece. For example, he's turned the bowl, mm-hmm. he's then drawn on the bowl, and then cut out all these shapes. And I mean, gosh, there must be, what, 50 pieces in this mm-hmm. bowl. And then painted them with milk paint, drilled the holes, and then sewn this bowl back together. So the milk paint allows him to sand through some of the layers and produce that sort of rustic, you know, worn sort of look, which I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. That's quite a nice patina that he's getting on his work.
Would he sell this as sculpture, or would somebody put, you know, peaches in it?
I've had many conversations over, you know, the past year with people looking at this bowl, and, you know, I ask them, well, would you, oh, no, they would just present it as a piece of art. You know, I don't know what, if you would put something in there, but it's just a very interesting object.
At the end of the gallery, under the sign that just says 30 years, is a huge painting by Ruth Armitage. It's called Juicy, and it's a big abstraction. It's framed actually in this big brown frame with a huge white mat. It's like 6 inches wide around. So the whole painting must be 6 feet diagonally, and it's thickly painted, wide brush strokes. It seems yellow and gold with these red arcs, very rough brush strokes there, and there's a bit of purple background. What do we know about Ruth?
Ruth paints abstract and non-objective work. She claims inspired by people in places of personal significance, using expressive color and line. And that helps weave a narrative that can be obvious or mysterious at the same time. You find yourself being drawn in with all the bright surface colors that are laid over some of the blues and violets. And it just kind of keeps getting more depth to it. You can spend a lot of time looking at it. You can come back a month later and look at it and just see a whole nother mm-hmm. part about it.
There's so many layers to it. I guess abstraction just hit a chord in the 20th century, and it just won't go away. People keep buying it, staring at it, and making of it what they want.
It's okay to trigger the imagination, and I think that's paramount and key almost in our society. I think it's real important. The artist's role now more than ever is to, we need inspiration, we need creativity, we need vision, and you know, the artists are supplying that, and I think the abstract is can be very engaging, and it can trigger more ideas. So it's almost like it's has a medicinal property, if you will.
Next to it is another one of yours. We might as well mention it because it is quite remarkable. It's about, what, 8 foot tall piece of black basalt, and you've notched into it either side.
To me, this was part of my vertebrae series.
Somebody's spine.
Yeah, and it's the concept of how life just functions, and we sort of take our bone structure for granted in a lot of ways. And, you know, when you look at a whale vertebrae that weighs, you know, it's as large as you and weighs two times one vertebrae, or a dinosaur vertebrae, say, and how large these creatures actually, I mean, that just blows me away. I'm using the stone as a metaphor for strength, and then trying to incorporate that.
It's on a little white wooden rolly trolley thing, and then there's a big block of granites, gray, salt and pepper, pattern. And then the basalt is this beautiful dark gray, very uniform, smooth. You call that grain, right?
Well, it's the crystal structure of the material. The basalt that we have here in the Pacific Northwest, which is the third largest basalt deposit on Earth after Russia and India, has this very super fine grain. And if you think about this, you know, 15 million years ago, molting 10,000 degrees and flowing, just like the volcano in Hawaii right now, that just fascinates me. And then, you know, this is when the West Coast was being built, and this was the material that came to the surface. So for me, this is a native material to our region, and so I like to explore that, and it just sort of means that much more to me to know this was in our backyard.
It just scares me when you wheel it around because it looks so unstable. But it's not going to snap, right? It's dry. No. Probably has a steel pole up the middle.
Well, there is about a 10-inch pin that this stands on. And basalt is incredibly hard and very strong. It's brittle. It's like 60% silica, so it's almost heading toward glass. But it's an incredibly strong stone.
Another sculptor is Greg Wilbur. And he specializes in hammered metal. So one of his pieces is this huge copper. It could be like an insect or a bacteria. It's got like a big circle with fronds coming off it. Every shape is kind of twisting and turning and sort of unexpected. There are kind of elements of crustacea in there, and then plants like beans. Right next to it, Greg has another hammered metal piece. He's hammered bronze. He starts with a flat piece, and somehow he's turned it into this beautiful vase. It's like a teardrop shape. It's almost like a water balloon, but really big water balloon, nearly 2 foot tall. And he's jammed a piece of wooden driftwood in the neck to make it into a stopper. How on earth does he do this?
Great question. I mean, he's literally taking a flat piece of metal and he's turning it into like a gourd shape by hammering, annealing. Sometimes he'll fill them with water and freeze them and work on the ice as a backer. And I mean, there's all these different processes that he's applying. But he has to be aware of the expansion of the crystals in the metal, because if they go too far, they will tear. So he has to anneal the metal to soften them. And so it's a real staging process that he goes through to be able to produce these pieces, knowing when they're reaching a limit and when it's time to control that. But he'll combine a lot of the different pieces, and he just does these lovely, delicate, sinewy little strands that can be several feet long, and then they flare out into a whole leaf pattern, and very organic.
The show is really interesting because it just shows a great level of craft, but mostly in the service of abstract art. And I think if somebody came and it'd take quite a long time to get through the show, because each piece is, you know, two or three pieces representing one of 15 people, and everyone has a different style, but there is this similar kind of thread through the whole show. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, this show turned out very well. We were all really pleased with the level of professionalism that's being displayed here in the gallery. And this show is up through December and then on into January, celebrating our 30 years, which is quite an accomplishment. So we have just a brief history of how we started. We have some of the founding members. I should probably mention Gail and Stan Beppu, Deb DeWitt and Bob Marchant, Lisa and Michael Learn, were very instrumental in starting the gallery down here in the Pearl, and then making it continue on. So the energy and the vision is still being carried forth by the current membership.
And there's a nice catalog, which is also viewable on the Waterstone website. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Dave Hazlett. He's an owner member artist at Waterstone Gallery, and he was talking about the show 30 Years Waterstone Gallery. The show is on now at 124 Northwest 9th. Next to Fuller's Coffee Shop, and is on now through January 29th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Dave.
Oh, thank you very much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
This is Joseph. I present Art Focus every Tuesday morning. 80% of our funding comes from members. Become a member. Go to kboo.fm, give, or text KBOO to this number, 44321.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Andy Warhol, Andy Warhol, silver stream, can't tell them apart at all.
Portland 90.7 FM y en la internet kboo.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.